Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Now, this Sunday, Galway are going to be playing Cork in the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship Final at Croke Park at 5:15pm. And they're targeting half the place to be full. I wonder why. Mary Newman's on the line. Mary, you're very welcome. Are you going to the final?
Hi, Sarah. Oh, yes, I'll be there. I'll actually be working on Sunday there because I do the Camogie Reports with the Echo in Cork. But irrespective of doing that, I would still have been at the final because, look, Camogie, I'm a Camogie person and hurling, and, of course, I would have been there supporting Cork. So I just can't get my head around the fact that your researcher was telling me ticket sales are slow because, you know, the hype and euphoria that's been there for the hurlers here in Cork. And I just can't understand why people won't get out and support our girls going for three in a row. I just can't get my head around it, you know. I they're Cork, they're still Cork, they're a Cork team, they're in Croke Park. And it's like...
And you couldn't get tickets, obviously, you couldn't get tickets for the men's match.
Oh, well, I had a ticket, all right, yeah.
You had a ticket, like, but normal people. Yeah, Mary, yeah, not like
people,
yourself.
Normal people, no, yeah. Normal people, I like that. No, but like, there was, like, I think a lot of people didn't get tickets who would have been supporters and going to all the matches because I suppose you have a certain group of people who just go to the final and you have a certain group who just go for the day out. But like, there's plenty of tickets there for Sunday. It's an ideal situation. To the Camogie final, it's brilliant to take kids to Croke Park. It's safe, you know, obviously the crowds aren't as big as hurling day, the excitement is still the same, it's still an All-Ireland final, the buzz, the quality of the fair on show is every bit as good as the hurling, and I just can't get my head around it, how especially women don't get out and support the women. I just can't.
And you know, now you're saying there, the quality of what you're watching is every bit as good. And I would absolutely agree with you. I mean, the skill and the talent on show is just amazing. But you will hear some people say, not just about Camogie, but generally women's sports in different disciplines, it's not as good to watch.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. I mean, anybody who was in Nolan Park for the two semi-finals the last day, there were two thrilling games. And, right, maybe it's not as fast, but I mean, that's probably gender. I mean, you know, fellas are probably that bit physically stronger as well. Yeah. But the girls, like, it's every bit as skillful and every bit as tough and hard. And, like, you know, a good game, ladies football, camogie, soccer, it's every bit as good as the hurling. I mean, God, we've had some dire hurling matches and football matches.
Yeah, well, we certainly have. So what do you think, like, then, you know, is behind it? I mean, if you had to guess, if you had to put out a couple of theories, what's behind it? Because as you say, everything is there. All the aspects seem to be there for a great day out.
Well, I just, first of all, I think women don't get behind women. People who play, I would imagine in the six counties that are playing on Sunday, and we must remember we have six counties next Sunday, whereas last year we technically had only five because Cork were there with the intermediate team as well. But of those six counties, I would bet anybody that there'll be a huge percentage of players sitting at home, kids that play, adults that play, teenagers that play, but just couldn't be bothered going to Croke Park to support the girls.
Okay, so the six counties, we've got Cork and Galway, Kerry and Offaly, Armagh and Laois. If you're sitting at home listening to us right now from any of those counties and you're planning on sitting at home on Sunday, I want to hear from you to 51551. Why are you staying at home? Why aren't you going to Croke Park? You can phone us as well, 0818 715 815. And Mary, stay with us. We've Julie Hartford as well on the line. Julie, are you going?
No, I won't be going now. I'm from a county, I'm from Meath, involved with ladies, actually, Gaelic football. And for me, I don't get the exposure to it. You know, I don't, where there are clubs in Meath, some staunch clubs and some new clubs setting up, but I don't get the exposure. That you know, it's, for me, it's a visual thing. You're not seeing it now. I would have actually sat down and watched the semi-finals on the telly, and I would have actually been at the men's finals.
Okay,
but it's just a vision. It's not in the schools where my daughters go to. It's not in my local club. I find the ladies' football have great ambassadors, like, you know, Carla Rowe in Dublin, Monica McGurk, a fantastic ambassador in my own club. But and they're visual, and they kids can see them on the sides of pictures and are exposed to them.
Okay.
But for where I am, it's a visual thing, and you I'm not exposed to it as
okay,
much.
Okay, so there's no awareness around it, there's no chatter around it in your community, people aren't saying, are you going to the match on Sunday, there's no talk about it, it's just not in the ether.
That's sad. That is actually sad.
So
you know, and it's not in my local school, you know, there are, you know, old clubs in Meath like Blackhall Gaels, and then there's newer clubs like Columbkills, I think, and St. Pat's have, and Ashburn. But, you know, for me, where I am, there is none in my area or in the schools.
Okay, and do you think then it would make a big difference if you had camogie in the local club or in the schools and, you know, the kids, local kids were playing it and all of that, even if it's not, you think it would?
It definitely would. They have no exposure really at the moment, you know. And like there would be other areas I know would be the same. You know, people would have to, in some areas, you would have people saying, well, where is there a nearby club, you know? And maybe they'd have to travel maybe 10 miles, 15 miles maybe to go to a club.
Yeah. And Mary, I might bring you back in on that. What do you think of that aspect of it, right? So, I'm even aware of this just watching sort of in my own local club how girls may be treated differently to boys and how the girls' matches, and I'm not just talking about camogie now, I'm talking about generally, the girls' matches might be on later than the boys or on a less convenient time for people. You know, is there just generally the push isn't there?
Well, I wouldn't think the push is not there because I know all the clubs here in Cork work very, very hard, and maybe it's up to the local clubs to, you know, work with the county boards. And I suppose Meath is probably more, I suppose, of a football county than a hurling county. So maybe in the counties where hurling is predominant, like Galway, Cork, you see camogie coming on. Now, I have to credit Kerry, in fairness. They've put a huge effort in Kerry.
Yeah.
And camogie has really, really taken off. So it proves if you do put in the hard work at the top, and I suppose it all comes down to the county board in those counties, getting the word out there, getting into the GAA clubs, promoting it, getting more maybe football clubs or hurling clubs to start up camogie teams, getting it into the school, and that's where I suppose the promotion will that's where the game is promoted within the counties, and I suppose the more counties promote it, and you know, the Camogie Association are working hard, and I suppose in fairness to them, they don't have the link up with TG Carr that the ladies football would have. The Camogie aren't sponsored by the TG Carr match.
Yeah, and sponsorship matters as well, doesn't it?
They don't show them.
Yeah.
They don't show those delayed camogie matches at all. And that would probably be something that, you know, the footballer are delighted with, and I wouldn't blame them. But I suppose promotion starts within the county.
Okay.
And if the county boards and those counties really, really pushed it, maybe, you know, to get more exposure in
all
those
right,
counties.
Mary, stay with us. With Mike Crowley also on the line. Mike, and you're very welcome. Mike, what about yourself? Are you going to it? Would you have thought about going to it?
No, I don't go to the matches, but I do watch them and I follow the Camogies on TV. But I think the big failing that the Camogie board are doing on Sunday is playing the game at 5:15 in the evening is absolutely ridiculous.
Okay.
Your families may be travelling from Cork at 10 o'clock in the morning, you'll be back till 10 o'clock at night. This is a huge problem. I mean, you've got to make it attractive for people to travel anyway. That's not attractive for people. Also, maybe Crow Park is too big a venue for such a game. Maybe they should look at bringing it to Tullis, a more central venue between two participating counties.
Is there, does someone else disagree with that there?
I would disagree there. Like, everybody's entitled to play in Croke Park, and I suppose it's every player's ambition to play in Croke Park. I agree with the time aspect of it, and I was listening to the president this morning on the radio, saying that they were working to get it, but I think it was all to do with availability for publicity-wise to show the games, that they had to go with 5:15, but I certainly would be pushing for maybe a 4 o'clock start, the same as the ladies football last week.
But I think you're
as entitled to play in Croke Park as a fella.
As anybody else. Mike, I might go back to you on that, on the time, right? Because lots of people getting in touch on that, and I want to bring Robbie in a moment. But can I put it to you that if the men's hurling final was on at 5:15, it wouldn't stop anyone going?
No, because there's a much greater demand for the men's game with respect to the ladies. I mean, the ladies play a fantastic game. The Camogie, the standard is very good. I mean, I coached Camogie teams in the past. The standard is brilliant. It's great to watch. But we can't compete with the men's because you're going to get the demands, capacity, people and follow it. It's a big, it's a different level.
What do you mean by a different level, right? Because I'm really interested now from your own perspective. Why do you think
back,
that?
Going back to years, you never had the pop, you know, you never had the capacity of following Camogie or ladies football. Now you've got diverse sports. Now you've got a lot more ladies playing soccer now and rugby as well.
Yeah.
And you have athletics and everything's coming to the fore. So you've got a huge diverse sports choice for ladies now, which is great. But I just don't think Croke Park, we're never going to get 80,000 into Croke Park for the ladies.
Why?
Well, the quarter past five start is one thing, is a huge mistake anyway. That's the number one. After that, I'm not sure.
Is it that men don't want to watch it?
No, I think a lot of guys watch it, and a lot of guys go to the pub and watch the games, and especially Cork, we'd always follow our own teams regardless what they're in. So I don't think that's the problem.
Okay.
I'm not sure, really. I don't think you put your finger on one specific thing.
But Mike, you're not going. You're not going Sunday. You know,
I've
like,
never gone to Camogie match.
Maybe now is the time to go. Maybe you should go Sunday. Get out your red and white. If you follow the hurlers, you should follow the girls.
And Mike, can I ask you, why? Yeah, you couldn't get a ticket for the hurlers, but if you could, you'd have gone. Am I right?
I don't know, because I've travelled for years and my source for tickets is passed on now, so that was always a problem for me then.
Okay. I'm not trying to demonise you here now. You've every right to make the decisions that you make, and there's plenty others around the country making the same decision, which is why the place is going to be half empty, even if they get record levels. Yeah. I'm just interested, why, you're obviously a big sports fan, you like the Camogie, why wouldn't you go to the match? Is it just you don't like it enough? It's just not quite enough. Is that it?
Well, it's not appealing to me as much as it would be to watch the men's game. It's a totally different game. Let's be honest, the men are physically stronger or faster. It's a different game. You can't compare.
Yeah.
It's not being, you know, it's a gender balance thing. It is.
It's not as enjoyable for you to watch then.
Well, no, I enjoy it. I admire the skills and everything and the game and the excitement and I admire all that, but it wouldn't be enough for me to actually take me all the way to Croke Park, especially for a quarter past five game in the evening. It makes no sense.
Okay. Robbie's on the line.
Robbie, what
do you make of all this, Robbie?
Oh, well, I agree with Mike there. Just the timing is a disgrace. You have a media now criticising people for not turning up, but you have to respect the audience. Men, the All-Ireland men's final started at 3:30. When the president comes up with logistics, that's a disgrace. That's not an excuse. I'm a teacher now in Dublin, and I have loads of young women who play Camogie, and they will not be enticed over to a game at 5:15. There's something good about Sunday afternoon going to a game. I can't understand. And like putting your hands up and saying we look into it for next year, that's it. I think it's terrible.
Okay.
I think like it's undermining the women.
Okay.
Right?
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, we have asked the Camogie Association why the match is on so late. We're waiting for a response from them, and if we get it while we're on air, we'll bring it to you. Can I ask you, Robbie, if it was on at 3:30, would you go? You're from Cork.
Oh, I'm from Cork and living in Dublin, and I go to matches. Yeah, I come here, to be honest with you, as a teacher, looking at the ambassadors of sport, I saw Maeve Cahalan, who's the captain of the Cork team, doing a brilliant interview. Aisling Thompson, fabulous young lady, brilliant, brilliant role model to young people. I go and I support. My own mother played Camogie. She even played for Cork in 1958, you know, and nobody else go to the matches then. And as regards not playing it in Croke Park, I think that would be a step backwards. I think they deserve to play in Croke Park. No, the only point I wanted to make was that
the
5:15.
Yeah.
I think it's a disgrace.
Okay, so you would go if the match was on at 3:30, which I think is really interesting.
I'm going to go anyway.
You're going anyway.
Okay. No, I'm in Dublin. I have no excuse for not going. Like, I just said, I think that 5:15 is terrible.
Okay, sorry about a bit of music background to yourself there, Robbie, for a second. Can I ask you, Robbie, about what Mike was saying, that he just doesn't find it as good to watch, that he finds the men, it's faster, it's stronger, and just, and you know, people are entitled to their opinion. Would you find the same?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, I'd prefer to watch a good game of hurling, but that doesn't mean that I'm not impressed by what the Camogie players are playing. Like, I don't want to make this a gender thing. Like, in fairness, the Camogie has come on in leaps and bounds. And like I think Camogie is oftentimes cleaner and faster. It's not as cynical as the hurling is, but All I want now is that the Cork Camogie players don't have a big fight in the dressing room at half time.
Well, who knows now exactly what happened there?
I know they're leaving at that just in case they get themselves in trouble. But that's all. That's the only point, right? I don't think the Camogie board is doing themselves any justice, or the ladies any justice by
putting it on so late. Yeah, okay. Well, like I said, we have asked now why it's on so late. I'm assuming that's not something that could be changed at this point, but if we do get some explanation as to why that's happening, we'll definitely bring that to you. Julie, have you been convinced by any of what you've heard, I wonder? I mean, like, if it was on earlier, like Robbie is saying, would that change your mind at all, or is it just not for you?
It's not even that it's not for me. It's just that I'm not exposed to it.
I
was just sitting here thinking that possibly, maybe to promote it, all the codes are eventually coming together. Would it be possible to have either the ladies' camogie final on the same day as one of the men's final, or as the ladies' football final, as we're all going to be one code at some stage?
Yeah, but that is interesting. I don't know, does anyone have any other thoughts on that? Mary, what do you think of that?
Well, we'd have the dual player issue then. Supposing Cork got to the two finals, or Meath got to the junior camogie or the intermediate camogie, and then you'd have people shouting, why is the camogie and the ladies football on the same day? You know,
but you could have it with a men's final.
Yeah, but
you could have it with a men's final.
And could you honestly see how people would get tickets? We couldn't get tickets to see the hurling match. And now how, in the honour of, like, how could we get tickets to see? We wouldn't get the tickets.
But like, if we had one ticket, we'll say, for the hurling final and the women's camogie final, like, it's one ticket to get into Croke Park, and no, that wouldn't work either. Sorry, I'm just, yeah.
No,
this is why you don't make policy live on air.
No. Yeah, it wouldn't work.
No, I don't know, Robbie, what do you think of all that?
Impossible, right?
No.
It's hard enough to get tickets, no, just right, not a runner.
Okay, so what is the solution here then, right, apart from the timing? Because even with the timing, Robbie, I'm sceptical, I have to say, that even if you brought it back to 3:30, I think you'd get more people. But, I mean, they're aiming for record attendance of 40,000. Like, that's the aim for this year. You know, so even at three, like half the stadium.
But how many people, how many counties support the Camogie? You know, like, you have to be realistic as well. Like, how many will the Irish Times write 3 or 4 articles about the Camogie final on Saturday? There were about 7 or 8 articles last Saturday about the Lions match. Like, it's, you know,
yeah,
40,000 for Camogie is quite good.
Okay,
but
okay.
I'm telling you, there'd be more there if it was on earlier. That's all I have to say. Anyway, okay, Sarah, thanks a million.
Yeah, Robbie, thanks a million. And I just, Mary, I might just ask you about that. 40,000 is quite good. And Mike sort of had the same idea, really, that 40,000 is not bad. Are people just aiming their aspirations a bit high? You know, I mean, this whole backing of women's sports is relatively new. Like, I know myself, nobody talked about camogie or hurling or anything for girls when I was a kid, or not that I was aware of. You know, this is relatively new. So maybe it's, you know, slowly as we go.
Yes, slowly as we go. I think was it 30,000 last year? I can't remember now how many were there last year. But look, let's push and see, can we get them?
Okay.
You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Okay, fair enough.
Let's push on. And as I say, Cork here, you know, the buzz is great. The push is on with the county board. They're doing great work pushing it. And the clubs are really, really pushing it and trying to get behind the girls. And look, if all the other 6 counties did the same. And like the gentleman there in Dublin was saying, like, the kids won't go to Croke Park at 5:15 to see Camogie match. But I bet if the Dubs are playing at 5:15, they'd go down to see them.
Yeah. Right, look, 51551. If you want to get in touch, the phone number 0818715815. WhatsApp is 0874848888. Julie and Mary, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818715815.
Today with Claire Byrne with news.
There will be a cost implication for them at some point down the line, is that right?
Debate.
You're not suggesting that the universities don't need those fees, are you?
And advice on the issues that matter to you.
And these vapes that have HHC in them, do we know, do they contain nicotine as well?
Today with Claire Byrne. Weekdays from 10 on RTE Radio 1 and the RTE Radio app.
What are you hearing today?
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, an award-winning guaranteed Irish company. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show, weekdays from 3 on RTE Radio 1.
It's Brendan Courtney in for Ray this Thursday afternoon. Coming up at 3, forget brat summer, this is the summer of the bug. We will be talking to an expert about the dramatic rise in insect numbers. We'll explore the final chapter of And Just Like That and look back at the unforgettable phenomena that was Sex and the City. And we've live music from Nick Mulvey, plus the 1-2-3 quiz after 4. Email ray at rte.ie if you'd like to get involved. We'll talk to you after a live line.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
We've been talking this week about back to school costs, and Maria has got in touch. Maria, you're very welcome. You've experience of this sort of from both sides of the aisle, for want of a better way of putting it. Can you tell me, first of all, about your experience as a mum trying to cope with back to school costs?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Sarah. Yeah, I guess that's why I texted in. As a mother of primary school kids, I would have been a single parent with two primary school kids and not much money to go around, and I was relying on the welfare and the back to school allowance and anything else that was going. But I remember our school, and it would have been a deaf school, disadvantaged school, and it had two school uniforms, one for sport and one for everyday use. And I remember, this was a cost to me. That was two different school jumpers, both with crests. And in fairness to my principal, I approached her, and she was very obliging. She sent out a poll to the parents, to the whole school, and the parents voted against us. They wanted to keep the two uniforms and keep the crests. So that was kind of my first experience in what are we doing here? You know, much as we all complain, sometimes we're our own worst enemies, I think.
Yeah, and it's funny, Maria, because we heard exactly the same thing yesterday from one of our callers, because I was asking her about, you know, why is it that we don't have non-crested uniforms? And it's a very similar thing. They had a poll in the school and the parents voted to keep the crests, which is more expense for everybody. But she believed there's a status thing about that. The parents want other people to know, you know, where their children are going to school.
I think with my one, it's more just tradition.
Right.
And people were just used to it being that way. And so that's the way they went. And again, my second experience in terms of, you know, this was triggering me yesterday, listening to people. Those school jumpers were, I remember walking into the school wear company the first time, walking out again. I just didn't have the money for the price of them. And I was really lucky with other parents who gave me, you know, older kids secondhand jumpers, I guess. So again, I approached the school down the road when my kids were older and asked them about doing a swap shop or just a giveaway. I actually had my kids' jumpers to give them. They weren't in bad nick, despite having gone down the ranks. And there was no take up. Nobody took them. And I just couldn't understand it, you know. And sometimes, I don't. I have no answers for this, but it was the complaining that we do about, you know, the allowances and welfare. I'm coming at this from a position of just being so grateful because I've left that time behind. But I use that as a memory to keep myself grateful in terms of, you know, I'll never forget the fear of not having enough money to pay the next bill or the next jumper or how to get it all together. But I found, and as I said, my school was a deaf school. I found the parent, you know, I was active about it. I wanted to try and change it, make it easier. And I found parents, it just wasn't taken up. As you said, is it status? I thought maybe tradition. I don't know what the answer was. But, you know, my two experiences in trying to do something about it were met with resistance, I suppose.
Right, okay. In terms of, you're talking about the fear there, and I'm just putting myself in your place, walking into the shop to get the school jumper and realising you can't afford it and walking out again. I mean, how was that? How do you manage with that?
Well, and I really am only talking my experience because mine is, everyone's is different. I was very lucky in that I had I had parents to fall back on. My mother was brilliant. Every August, she would come down to me and make me go out. She would buy the shoes, the good shoes, you know, for my kids. She wouldn't let them go short on the shoes. And then it was, I can't even say it was swallowing my pride. It was going to people I knew and saying, here, you've got older kids. What do you do? You know, there's four jumpers there was that year. And I just was shocked at the price of them when I could see what they cost in Dunn's, you know.
And were you worrying about keeping all that from your kids? You know, your struggle to try and keep the show on the road. Were you worrying about how it might affect them or how they might see you?
I wouldn't even say that was a worry. That was just never going to happen.
Okay.
It was a case of, maybe that's why I don't have a memory of shame. Even I just have a memory of they were never going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no issue. But that was primary school, you know. I had no issue, you know. Friends and other parents were great at giving me other jumpers, and my kids at that age didn't care.
For what it's worth, Maria,
that's how I work my.
For what it's worth, there should be no memory of shame. There should be only a memory of pride. Like, you just fought and you did everything you could for your family, and then you tried to help other families. And by the sounds of things, people don't want the help, which I think is fascinating. And you have sort of on the. I mentioned you're on two sides of the aisle. You're sort of on the other side of the aisle now because you're on the school side of things, and you see a different side of things. Can you talk to me a bit about that?
Yeah. Time for all of us moves on. I'm a teacher. I have my own money. We don't have those money worries. And I have two older teens, and they are reminded of all of that all the time. So yeah, now as a parent of teens without those money worries, but also as a teacher, I'm a teacher in secondary. I guess my second issue, you know, in that I'm talking about when I didn't have the money, I was wondering what is it with parents, you know, that there is help or there are ways around it and they wouldn't do it. But now as a teacher, that book scheme worries me, I suppose, is a nice way of putting it. In our school, those books are treated like rubbish, you know, not by everybody. I should cover myself with all of that. Not by everybody. But our corridors, our lockers, both during the school year and at the end of the school year, those books are everywhere. They're in ribbons. They're everywhere. They may or may not have names on them. So I guess yesterday I heard somebody wasn't happy with the deposit.
Mm.
But again, I'd say versus the money that used to have to be spent on those books, the deposit, at least for me in my household with the two kids, if they wreck those books or don't have the books by the end of the year, they'll be paying the deposit and they'll be buying the books.
So that
out
teaches
of their own
them,
money, you
yeah.
know, with their jobs.
So do you think the books are being treated like that because, you know, that old adage that we hear, you know, if you get it for free, you don't care about it. I don't think that's exactly the saying, but, you know, that concept.
No, I do, because you don't have parents. And again, it's not the majority, but it's significant. It's visible at the end. If parents could see those corridors and the lockers, you know, and the way it's done, I think it would be completely different. But yes, I think you're right. When they're for free, there's no warnings going out, maybe. I don't want to put words into parents' mouths, but it's definitely visible in the school. And to add to that, I would say this blanket government job of throwing money at the problem to everyone, and I say this as somebody who needed that money before and doesn't need it now. I think that's a mistake.
And what are you talking about there now? Are you talking about the free books or the free food?
Sorry, the free book scheme that goes to everyone.
Right.
Whether you need it or not. I think the money should be directed towards, certainly directed towards the people who need it. But the rest, the money that would be left over with people like myself at this point, that's why I feel I can speak about both. You know, it's great to get, but we certainly don't need it. And I
But do you have no time then, Maria, for the squeeze middle that we hear about as well? You know, that you know they pay for everything, they get nothing. Or that's the narrative around it. You know, so they are the people benefiting from the free books. They might not really be getting any other sort of help from the state apart from child benefit. You know, is it not a little bit of something given back? You know, that, I mean, that's the argument for it.
It is, but there's certainly an awful lot of people out there who don't need it. And I do feel schools are in the best place. When you're talking, again, the voluntary contributions, schools, I see it in my own school, are crying out for money. Do you know, we've walls fallen in and rooms that aren't fit for purpose, and schools know best how to spend a lot of that money, and perhaps I'm not throwing out answers. I really am trying to throw out answers, but these blanket approaches I don't agree with.
Okay.
And I feel
throwing money
at the problem. Yeah, I would feel some of that money would be better used rather than this blanket approach to everybody getting free school books, would be better used going towards schools to use.
Okay.
You know, they're the ones that best know how sometimes.
Okay, brilliant. Maria, stay with us if you don't mind. We've Ciara on the line as well. Ciara, what's your point?
My point is that I think parents need to stick to basics. I think parents are overspending so much. I mean, I stick to basics with my kids. Like, I'm spending very little because they're only getting the school tracksuit. They're not getting the school uniform as well, because wearing the school tracksuit is acceptable at school. You know, my daughter hasn't grown out of, she's going into first class. She hasn't grown out of her dress from last year. Two dresses, they're washed, they're ready to use again. School bags are washed every year and ready to use again unless they're completely broken. I'm not into buying them twistables and their own pens and pencils and all this kind of stuff when all that's provided in school are expensive. Water bottles or pencil cases. I think parents just way overspend because that's what kids want. They want the designer bag or the branded bottle or this or that.
And do you feel any of that pressure, Ciara? Are they coming home to you saying, I want that bottle? I don't know what the bottle is, but I've heard talk about it. It hasn't come to my house yet anyway.
Yes,
but
it does occasionally. Or, you know, my oldest son, he's 11, and he said, well, they all have these runners at school, I want them. And I was just like, well, let's go and see how much they cost. And showed them and said, look, and let's go down now to Kildare Village, go into one of the shops there and get their, like, 3-for-2 bargain. Or last year, I think I spent €120 on 3 pairs of runners to the kids down in one of the shops because they were doing a discount.
Okay. So would you have any problem with what Maria is talking about there? Well, two things, actually, Maria is saying. I'm interested in your thoughts on it. First of all, about the free book scheme. Do you think, do you need that? Should you be getting it? Is it good? Does it help you? Or is it something that maybe should be more targeted?
So I think it should be targeted. Like, now, I have a child that she gets bursaries, but she's in a private school, like an all-girls school, and she has to pay for her school books. And then you see people who are getting them at primary school that might necessarily need them because, you know, they might be very wealthy. So I think it should be targeted based on people's incomes.
Okay.
And not just blanketly. But I do think there are problems with school books. I know when my daughter was in primary school, she got the free school books. And she got a maths book and all the answers were already in it. And the time I discovered, she hadn't learnt anything because she was just in class just writing down in her copybook the answers.
Acing all her tests.
She learned nothing. I think we see the government waste money all the time by doubling children's allowance for everybody and these great giveaways, which are fantastic. But, you know, I think things need to be targeted, to be fair to people. There are people that are really struggling.
Yeah. Well, it looks like they're going to be targeted.
On one income.
Yeah, some of the targeting will be happening this year anyway because there's not going to be that big cost of living package by the sounds of things. But the free book scheme is in place.
I'm also curious to know as to why some schools struggle so much with the money they have and other schools don't. I mean, who audits the schools and where does the money go? And the parents never find that out. Like, as a parent, when you're paying some of these, you know, voluntary contributions, and some of them like my kids were in a different school before and it was 150 euro a child. Now they're in a school, it's like pay for two, get one free. So that's 60-60 and then zero for the third. So I'm wondering, you know, who's watching how the schools spend the money?
That's an interesting question.
Give parents access to that information.
Yeah. And it's not even necessarily that you're saying that there's anything dodgy going on, but I mean, the people who are running schools often aren't trained as business owners. You know, they're not trained in finances. That's not their job necessarily,
That's
but they're suddenly
like
put in place for business.
Schools in Foxtrot pay the same electricity bill as the schools in Tala, you know, and, you know, or down the country. So they have, a lot of them have the same costs because they have children. So what is the money, you know, what is the money being spent on? And are people getting value for their money? So, you know, and those records I don't think are available to
the financial
parents
records.
Or,
yeah, I don't know, Ciara.
Auditor, and nobody knows. That's a big question people need to start asking.
Okay, well worth putting that out there, Ciara. Thank you. Stay with us. We have Michelle on the line. Michelle, you're working as a BCO, as it happens, on Fair City here, but you have an interesting point on school costs. Talk to me.
Hi, Sarah. How you doing? I was just listening there about the school uniforms, and we live in Drogheda, and our local school here, primary school, who actually has the biggest pupil capacity in Ireland. And what we do in the Parents Association is at the end of the school year, we have a week where all parents from the school bring in their uniforms that they don't need anymore, and the Parents Association, we kind of sort them out into ages, and then over 2 weeks in July, parents come in and take whatever uniforms they need, and they make a donation to just a donation box that we have. It's the second year we've done it, and this year in donations alone, we raised 816 euro. And it's amazing. Like, I have two boys in the school, and particularly with taxi bottoms, the knees of them seem to come out an awful lot. I would have gotten five pairs of tracksuit bottoms for the boys, for two of the boys, and it just makes an awful lot easier at this time of the year, particularly, you know, instead of buying new stuff, that at least you have your one set new and your backup set, you know?
I mean, it's a brilliant idea, and it's great to see that parents are getting involved in it, because we have been hearing from other people that parents don't seem to want the leftover clothes, or, you know, the lost and found pile might be made available by a school and parents just don't show up for it.
Yeah, I, to be fair, I think the fact that it's ran by the Parents Association is a big drive, because what we do is, you know, you take out the bits that you know isn't going to be used, and actually that's donated onto like a clothing bank. But there was really, really good stuff that was there, absolutely. And I'm sure if there's other parents that may be listening from the area, like, there's no doubt the amount of parents that were coming in with a dropping off stuff, and it wasn't just sixth class things, you know, like our boys are in junior infants and third class. So there was a massive amount of just children outgrown stuff and like new things in packets, you know, new shirts. There's a lot of that.
Michelle, stay with us if you don't mind. We have Dr. Sharon Lambert from UCC on the line as well. And I know, Sharon, you've been keeping a close eye on all of this debate and the costs and how people are coping with the costs. And I think you have a really interesting way of looking at this, which is that you think people don't understand how expensive it is to be poor. Can you explain that to me?
Hi, Sarah. Yeah, there's often a lot of judgment about the way in which people spend their money, and it's, we only ever think about other people's lives from our own perspectives, but it is actually very expensive to have no money. So I know we've spoken about this before. For example, if you want to tax your car, and I know that Labour have a statement out today, Labour Party, about this. So if you want to tax your car, for example, if you tax it for 12 months, it's cheaper than if you do it every 3 months. So that means that and that happens with insurance, it happens with, you know, how you pay your electricity. So things that you need, when you pay for them, if you don't have the money, it ends up costing you more. There's a lot of, you know, judgment about parents around back to school, about, you know, the fact that parents do buy new things for their children. But if you're somebody who lives with shame and stigma of poverty, and you want to keep that away from your children, and especially if you experienced it yourself as a child, then you do buy the new things because you don't want your child to be the child in the class who is in any way stigmatized because they don't have enough. Because we know if you go back only 20 years, children were shamed in school, in public, if they did not bring in money. You may have heard a lot of people rang in, you know, people who are in their 50s and 60s now, ringing in about the physical violence that they experienced in schools. And sometimes that was because they were poor. So you can have generations in a family where this huge shame and stigma attached to poverty. So the only way that you can make yourself feel better as a parent, because it's so hard to get out of the situation, is that at least they have something new starting in September. But that something new might not be, you know, really, really expensive. It might be new, but it might be cheap new, which means that you're having to buy it multiple times over.
Okay, so you buy the polo shirt maybe that, you know, from like maybe one of the much cheaper brands or, you know, but it's new, but then you have to buy it again in 2 or 3 months' time.
In a couple of months'
time. Yeah, okay.
But one of the things that has struck me in the last couple of weeks when people are talking about the back-to-school costs is the judgments that people make about other parents. And, you know, in relation to the free school books, and people, you know, it's good to have universal targets for children. Because if you don't, if you take, for example, free school meals, if you said, well, that's only going to be for some kids, people will know then who those children are. There will also be people who cannot afford it, but who will pay for it because they don't want their child to be stigmatized. And that would happen with the books as well. So, you know,
that
it's
interesting. So interesting, yeah. Because, I mean, we'll say even from my own perspective, Sharon, I think we're getting the free school meals this year in our school. And I'm very excited about it because I don't want to have to make the lunches anymore. But that's the only reason I'm very excited about it. You know, my kids get a hot meal in the morning if they want it. They certainly get a hot meal in the evening and they get a nice lunch. And, you know, we're very fortunate we don't have a problem doing that. And I do wonder, you know, is this a waste of money on me? I mean, it's a convenience for me for sure. But I don't need it. I really don't need it.
You see, that's again when we think about it from our own perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sarah, if you think about this, an organisation called Silent Voices Ireland, they're a branch of Alcohol Action Ireland, for example. There are people who on the outside look like they have money, but there might be a problem drinking in the house. There are children who come from homes where you think that's a house that has money, but that child might not have had breakfast that morning because the parent might have done well as a result of mental health issues or an addiction issue. So it's we don't always know the story of the child who's coming in the door. We might think we know the story of them because of the address that they live in or the house that they live in or the occupation that their parent has. So it's better to have universal approaches when it comes to children. There are other ways, you know, if you think about the electricity credits that were given out, and they were given out to people who could well afford to have paid their electricity bill. Those things can be targeted because they're for adults. But when you start to single children out, it would become very obvious who has been singled out.
And what about schools? Could you single schools out? Would that help? Or do you still run the risk there of children?
Yeah, stigmatizing schools.
Okay, yeah. Of course, yeah. Okay, so, okay. Can I ask Maria, what do you think of that, Maria? Because I know you were saying, and you've a very good reason for saying it, that you think these things should be targeted, and you outlined very clearly why you think, for example, the free books should be targeted. What do you think of what Sharon is saying? Do we have Maria? Maria might
money.
Not... Oh, sorry, Maria, you're there now. Go on ahead, yeah.
Apologies. Yeah, I'm agreeing with some of what your last speaker there is saying. And absolutely, as a teacher, we would certainly see the kids that we know have financial difficulties in the background are the ones that are the best dressed with the best phones as teenagers. So, and I do understand the stigma that's attached to it, but it's all this, there's no joined up thinking, because I think maybe there isn't a way around hot meals, but there is a way around, hot meals being that, you know, people might know if somebody's getting free meals. Mm. But if I bring it back to the books, if those books are sent out to the people who need it, and I'm being very broad here, nobody's going to know. And then that money could be the extra money for the people who don't need it can go back into the school for them to use to stop all this voluntary contributions that they're then looking for from all parents. Am I making sense?
You are. You absolutely are, because then you have parents who actually can't afford the voluntary contribution, struggling to try and find the money for that so that their kid maybe isn't stigmatised, while the parent gets the free books that they don't need. You know, and
indeed,
yeah.
And you know, I, as a teacher, I don't know all the expenses that, that run the school. But to answer question of another previous caller, where's all that money going to? One that I would know of, and our building, as I said, teacher, our school building is not fit for purpose. And the biggest bill that I know, because we all see it, goes on heating that building. It's a fortune it costs the school to heat that building. And it's either too hot or too cold. And I would imagine, I don't know, as I said, it's just as a teacher, there's a huge amount of money going there in daily expenses for the school. So that, again, I'm saying to you, if the schools had that money, and I absolutely agree, I think that's a great point that I might even bring to my own school. I think schools need to be a lot more open with where the money is going, so that parents, this is the voluntary contribution, so that parents can understand what their contribution is going towards, you know, because...
I think
when
that would help everybody. Yeah, I think that would help everybody.
Yeah,
Maria,
listen,
we're going to leave it there. Really interesting discussion, ladies. Thank you all so much for getting in touch and for talking to us on the programme today. That's Maria and Sharon and Kira and Michelle. And if you want to join the conversation at any point, 51551 is the text, 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
I'm James Elder with UNICEF, and I've been to Gaza. I've met the terrified mothers who know that their love isn't enough to feed their children. I've met the starving children in hospital too weak to cry. They need food. They need it now. UNICEF is delivering life-saving therapeutic food, but we urgently need your support. I've seen donations from Ireland bring hope where there was none. Please visit unicef.ie and help save a child's life today. Thank you.
Celebrate summer this week at Centra with their amazing summer sizzler offers, like selected barbecue meat, any 3 for €10, Caramico take-home pizzas, €5 each, plus Moretti and Heineken 12 bottle packs, €17 each. Centra, live every day. Enjoy alcohol sensibly.
RTE Radio 1.
Hello, it is me, Joanne McNally, that Melter comic from the south side of Dublin, and I'm off on a national tour. My new show is called Pino File. That's Pino File. Like most women my age, I file Pino. I'm going all over. Dublin, Cork, Killarney, Castlebar. Tickets available now from your local venue box office or on my website, joannemcnally.com. Oh, men invited also for diversity.
Entertainment updates on RTE Radio 1.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Well, who among us is not obsessed with Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson and perhaps the greatest love story of all time? Not to overstate it. Mary O'Connell is among us who are obsessed with it. Mary, you're very welcome. You've been watching this whole romance as it develops with interest. What do you think of it?
I have. Well, I have been watching Liam Neeson for years anyway. Okay. Love him as an actor. And I remember, of course, Pamela Anderson. I remember her from her Baywatch days when we were all jealous of the red swimsuit and the blonde hair. But I'm loving the fact that they seem to have found each other. It looks fabulous. I mean, we all, I suppose, need something to give us hope, and they give us hope as an older couple, an older celebrity couple dating.
And when you say you've been watching Liam for years, you know, what do you like about him? Yeah. Or do you have a favourite film, or why do you like him so much?
Well, I shouldn't admit to it, but my guilty pleasure is kind of the Taken films. I just love them.
Nothing wrong with that.
He said, I will find you and I will kill you. I just love that. I mean, it's synonymous with Liam Neeson, I think, at this stage. But also, he is a good actor. I saw him recently in, I love him in Michael Collins as well. but I saw him in an Irish movie, Saints and Sinners, I think it's called.
Yeah, in The Land of Saints and Sinners.
And he was really, in The Land of Saints and Sinners, that's it. He was really good in that. I mean, it just showed him acting to perfection. And then he was in Derry Girls, which was the first side of his comedic side. Yeah. So I can't wait to see The Naked Gun, to see how he turns to comedy, you know?
He
stayed very serious throughout the whole movie, but I'm dying to see it, not only for the comedy aspect of it, but also I'm dying to see their chemistry now.
And talk to me about their chemistry then, because they've been doing all these interviews, haven't they? Actually, you know what? I tell you what, let's have a listen to some of what they've been saying.
On a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being the cuddliest, how big of a cuddle monster are each of you? Pamela?
It depends, but 9.
Liam?
I'm a 10.
You're a 10.
Yeah.
What do you each consider to be the sweetest thing about the other? Pamela, what's the sweetest thing about Liam?
Oh, boy. Oh, just that he's so kind and generous.
Liam?
Her spirit. And her she's a giggler like me. I love her.
Right. You are a giggler.
Oh, I hadn't actually heard that clip. Her spirit.
I saw it. It's so sweet. Her spirit.
He's so kind.
Look at that. He's so kind. I mean, look at Pamela Anderson. The first thing you'd expect him to say, oh, well, just look at her, you know. But no, he says her spirit. And I love that he said she's a giggler like me because, you know, laughing together. I think there was a headline somewhere along the way where it said, laugh together, you stay together. And I think that's in the promo for the movie. And in the beginning, I think a lot of people thought, Sarah, that this was being put on for the movie, that they were showing it like they were out there promoting the movie and it looked like they were romantically involved. It took a while for it to actually realise, no, they really are involved. You can see it. You can see the way he looks at her. And I mean, that excerpt that you played there, how sweet is that?
I know. And that's in all the interviews. Yeah. And like, what do you think then it tells us about love in later life? You know, what, like your own experience of that?
Well, my own experience is that I would have talked to Joe in the past about a book I've written, Third Time Lucky, which was me going out there as an older lady trying to find love again. I suppose a lot of us come to love as we get older because of divorce or, God forbid, a bereavement. And we have to go through like a feeling of grief to get back out there again. And when we do, it is daunting. It can be daunting. But now looking at Pamela and Liam, you can say, well, there's hope there. And for me, from my experience, yeah, I had the bad dates. God knows I wrote about them all. The scammers are out there, the playboys, the playgirls, they're all there. But dating at an older age is also full of positives and it adds excitement to life. You just have to hang in there, I think. It's daunting in the very beginning. It's hard to get back out there because it's definitely not like what it used to be. But as Pamela and Liam, I think, have shown us, is that they were both loved before. I mean, Pamela was with Tommy Lee and we all remember Natasha and how she tragically died, and Liam, and he wasn't really that interested in dating again. But it's lovely now to see them get together.
Yeah,
and
it is.
That we can all find that again if we want it. Not everybody wants it.
So you kept at it, Mary, didn't you? I mean, despite an awful time. Yeah, like, you know, and it's hard out there dating. You know, I haven't been at it myself in a while, but I remember it being hard, and I know people are still at it, and I know it's hard. And especially, as you say, you know, if you have a divorce or if you have lost your wife or your husband or your partner, you know, there's the grief that's involved in that. So how did it go then? You know, how did you finally find the one or the next one?
Okay. It was my third time looking, okay. I have to say. Yeah. So actually I found him close to me, just 10 minutes walk away. Somebody that I had never really seen until the beginning of COVID when it was lockdown and we were all walking around, and we did click online first of all, and then we saw each other once, or should I say I saw him from the car one time and knew it was him. And it was when I saw him from when I passed by in the car that I was very interested in. You see, he has a mustache. Your listeners will have heard that before. And mustaches weren't the thing for me.
Okay.
But when I saw him well-dressed, nicely groomed, nice man, I thought I'd meet him. And when I met him, it was like, it's like Liam Neeson said there, it was the spirit. He was so kind, a gentleman. I think we look for different things as we get older.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that love and sexuality, it doesn't diminish with time, it doesn't. But it does get a little bit calmer. I think Joan Crawford once said that love is a fire. But whether it's going to warm your heart or burn down your house,
yeah,
you can never tell. Now, I prefer to be warmed by the fire than burnt, of course. And that's not to say that it can get hot from time to time. Of course it can. But a steady temperature is the best way of going. So having a companion, that emotional connection,
yeah,
and that friendship, I think that's the greatest thing as you get older, you know, and that's fundamental to all of us as human beings, regardless of.
Does he still have the mustache? Because they're all in the mustaches now, you know.
He does. He's right in style right now.
You wouldn't have him without it, I'm sure, at this point.
No. At this stage now, I'm looking at it, I don't even see it anymore. I see the man, not the mustache.
Okay.
And it's never going to disappear. He's told me he has it since he was 15, so.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So he was way ahead of the curve when it comes to the trends. Mary, stay with us if you don't mind. We've Bernie on the line as well. Bernie Kern. And Bernie, you're very welcome. You have a birthday coming up, Bernie, I think, this month, or is it over already?
Actually, yes, the 23rd of this month.
23rd.
Yes.
And what ripe age will you be?
I'd be 83.
83. Well, happy birthday in advance. What are you going to do for that? Will you have a party, do you reckon, or...?
No. I just go out and have a good time. I'm not into the parties, samba at this stage anyway.
Okay.
I really wasn't earlier on either. You know, I don't like a big fuss, but as you get on, I suppose you change as well.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about that change then in your own life, if we're talking about finding love later in life. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because Billy the Kid is your love.
Yeah, Billy the Kid. Yeah, he's actually standing here beside me. I go to Friends of the Elderly, and Billy is a volunteer. And I just thought he looked nice when I saw him first. And then he won two tickets, so he asked me to go with him. And from there, we just clicked. It just went from there on.
Okay, so hold on now. I'm going to pause you up for a second, because that all sounds very exciting and you've glossed over it. So you met Billy the Kid. When was this? Was this last year, the year before, a couple of years ago?
2.5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
And did he catch your eye? Like, what did you notice about him when you saw him?
Yeah, I thought he looked nice. I was in Friends of the Elderly, the club that I go to, and he's a volunteer there. I thought he looked nice. And then all of a sudden, he had two tickets, and he asked me to go with him. And that's how the romance really flourished from there.
Okay, so you're in the Wednesday Club, I think it is, in Bolton Street, and he had two tickets. What were the tickets for?
Pardon?
What were the tickets for,
Jeremy? The tickets was for the show. What show was it, Billy? I forget what show. Bored Gosh was in anyway. Yeah.
Okay. Billy's there. And was he nervous, do you know, asking you?
Were you nervous asking me to go?
No, not particularly.
Not at our age, I don't think so. He just went for it.
And what was that first date like? Because you sound like, I don't know, a teenager there giggling away, the two of you. I mean, it sounds great. What was the first date like?
We kind of clicked, and we enjoyed the same crack or whatever. And we just seemed to click and hit it together, you know, it seemed perfect.
Okay.
It just did, yeah.
And is it the companionship then, and just the friendship, and you
it
just,
is.
Yeah.
Yes. As you get older, it's lovely to have a partner, and you're quite comfortable going out. You have a partner, you're going into mixed groups, and you feel so much better. you know.
Rather than going there on your own.
Company is good.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, you're inclined to feel a bit uncomfortable when you go into company and they're all paired off or whatever, so it's nice to have a partner with you.
Were you on the lookout for someone, Bernie? At the Wednesday
no,
Club?
No, it just happened. At that stage in my life, I wasn't thinking about anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, but then it just grows, you know what I mean?
And
you know, it's not a big mad sexual thing. It's companionship. There's a lot involved in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the fire's burning, but not too brightly.
And going on holidays together, it's lovely, you know? We go to Benidorm. We've been there twice already. And different places, go out for weekend meals and all. It's lovely to have a partner to do that with.
God, so that sounds great. Like, I mean, so yeah. You've been to Benidorm twice.
At my stage, it's great. Pardon, Benidorm twice, yes.
Yeah.
And we're heading there again in September for 3 weeks. So it's lovely.
For 3 weeks, right, okay. And can you remember after the first date, did you know this is going to work and like, you know, this is something for me? Or did you go on a second date very quickly? Or do you remember?
Yes, I did. We seemed to click immediately.
Okay.
You know, we're same type of people, same temperaments and the good crack and what have you, you know.
And before you were going to Benidorm with Billy the Kid, where were you going? Like, or did you go on holidays? Did you go with family? You know, what did you do before
that?
Well,
I mostly went with my daughter a lot, you know. So I didn't want to be, I thought, have her own space. So it was great to meet Billy and get on with another section of my life, which you don't expect at my age, but it's brilliant to have a partner.
Yeah.
You know?
So what does your life look like then? Do you live separately or are you thinking about moving in? Or would you ever think about separately? Okay, so you wouldn't be thinking about it yourselves.
No, Billy has...
Go on.
Billy has an apartment and I have my own house. And I think it works so much better. We look forward to seeing each other and whatever, and we're not, you know, we have our space as well. I think romance works so much better that way. For me anyway.
Okay.
And I think for Billy.
Okay. Billy agree?
He's saying yes.
Yeah.
He's saying yes. Do you
want
to speak to him?
Go on. I'm sure I'd have a quick chat to Billy.
He said he's hearing us very bad. I think he's shy.
Oh, okay. Well, he wasn't shy when he came up to you. Come on, Billy might have a quick chat to us.
You better believe it. Like all men, yeah.
Like all men, exactly. When it comes to the hard conversations, the woman's put forward. Isn't that the way it goes?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're living separately. You wouldn't think about going down the aisle again, would you? Or would you?
No way. I've been there and done that. And Billy has been the same. You know, he's a widower. So long, and myself, you know, my husband's 8 years dead and his partner's 20 years, so no, but the companionship is brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
It's lovely to be able to go out with someone, go here, there and have you go for meals and holiday, it's lovely, you know.
And I couldn't let you go, Bernie, without asking why. Oh, sorry, Marie, you want to get in?
Sorry.
Go on, Marie, yeah.
Yeah, it's just that when Bernie said, no, we're a happy house, and she sounds it, and so does Billy. They sound so compatible there, the way they're bouncing off each other. But Kerry and myself always said we'd never get married again, either, Bernie. Now, you're in 2.5 years with Billy. I'm 5 years with Kerry, and we just got engaged this year. Even though we said we'd never get married, we got engaged.
Bernie, Billy, I hear Billy in the background.
So never say never.
He's saying he's hearing all the time, which he's hearing is bad.
Okay.
He's very shy, I'd say, as
but,
well. Yeah.
So never say never, Billy and Bernie.
Never say never. Yeah.
And
say never
know.
Say never.
Never say never.
He's saying never say never.
Oh,
Billy,
there
the
you go. There you go. We'll have you on in a couple of months, Bernie, and things will have changed. Mary, can I ask you, why did you change your mind? Like, what changed your mind, Mary, about getting engaged?
Well, nothing major, nothing dramatic or anything like that. But we were both keeping two households going, and we were very happy that way. It's like Bernie says, she was there, very happy that way. But we got on so well, and we were so easygoing in ourselves. We made the leap to move in together. Now, we said, look, if it doesn't or is not working out for one of us, we'd go back to the way it was. But my God, it worked out
almost immediately. I mean, yeah, there's the slight little differences in, you know, you need to know when the other person needs a little bit of space or whatever. But Kerry, we were trying to decide then where we would live. Well, Kerry moved in to into our house now, as we see it, and he is happy out, and I'm happy out, and we're just so happy together, and our friends are so happy for us. The one thing I saw with the Liam and Pamela story as well was that, you know, Natasha's family were happy for him. Mm. Kerry has three children. I have three children. Our children are delighted for us. Mm. Like, Kerry's children are delighted that you know, that he's met somebody. And my children are just delighted that I brought somebody decent home at long last.
Lovely. You know? After all your disasters. And Camille, how did the engagement happen? Did he propose? Did you propose?
No. No, he didn't, and I didn't. We were talking about it, and we were talking about moving in, and then we said, well, if we're going to move in, maybe we should just get married. And we both said, maybe we should. There's no big dramatic... Like, when I was younger, I used to long for this, you know, prince to arrive on the white steed, but the white stallion, that isn't real life. In real life, we spoke about moving together, and then we just talked. We were looking in a jeweler's window one day, and let me tell you, I never say no to sparkle. I just love sparkle in my life. And I saw a ring I liked, and Kerry said, let's get it. And that's how it happened. Yeah. That's it just happens like that. But it was the aftermath of, now we've made, gosh, we're taking that other step. Yeah. And it was that aftermath
In so many ways, Mary, that's more romantic than any of the big romantic proposals, isn't it? You know, I think there's a true romance to that. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Bernie, can I ask
that's
you...
That's why I'm saying to Bernie, never say never.
Yeah, and I think that message is going home. Yeah. Bernie, can I ask you about your own kids? How many kids do you have?
I had six. I buried three.
Oh, did you?
So I have two sons and a daughter left, but I still have a son living with me. So that changes a lot of situations there.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
About moving in or anything, to be none of that.
Of course, yeah.
That's the way I feel, you know. But we still have a great relationship, me and Billy. But regards to, I don't think we would ever move in together.
Yeah, well, that's what you think about.
He's laughing here. And I'm not moving in and moving out.
He wasn't expecting the conversation to take this turn, or maybe he was hoping the conversation would take this turn. And did you talk to the kids about it, Bernie? Did you feel you needed to talk to them about it when you started your relationship?
I didn't. No, they just say, welcome, Billy, but wholeheartedly, whatever I choose would be my decision. Really, and that's the way I feel about it. It's not, they wouldn't mind, although I have a son living here, which I hardly ever see him. You know, young guys, they do their own thing, you know. But, I don't think, for me, it wouldn't be on the cards.
Okay.
Billy's looking at me here pretty serious.
Billy seems to be hearing everything pretty clearly your end there, Bernie. There's a bit of selective hearing going on here.
I can't breathe, he's around, you name it. Every day, every morning, I give him his space. He doesn't give space, he's up every day. But there you go. But he still has his own apartment, and I'm happy living in my house.
Fair enough. And how did he get the name Billy the Kid? You got to tell me.
How did you get? Well, actually, his second name is Kid. That's his name.
Oh,
Billy the Kid.
Okay.
So, and you get some sick over it, but that's his name. His name is Kid, and Billy is his first name. So he gets some sick, but he's quite used to it, I think, at this stage.
Okay. I have a birdie telling me, and I don't know if this is true, that he's into powerlifting. Is that right, Billy the Kid?
Ooh. He's actually a world champion powerlifter.
No. That's amazing. And is he still at it?
Well,
what
done,
age is Billy? I never
and
checked
with
him. Well done, says Mary. Yeah.
He holds the title at the end of in October. He's hoping to keep his title. He'll be going for the competition again to keep his world championship.
Okay, look, I'm sorry now. I have to hear more about this world championship in powerlifting, and we need a bit more information about Billy. But will you hold on, Bernie and Mary, if you don't mind? We're taking a quick break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Symphony Shorts.
Family-friendly, relaxed daytime concerts of big hit orchestral music with National Symphony Orchestra Ireland and the energetic presenter Jesse Grimes at the National Concert Hall. In October and December, discover some of the greatest music ever written with excerpts from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet on Sunday, October 5th and Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker on Saturday, December 13th. See nch.ie.
Bill?
Yes?
Can you throw my green dress in the bin?
Are you sure?
Yep.
It's not that bad, love. And when your sister said you looked like a courgette, I'm sure she meant it in a cute way.
Bill.
We could at least donate it. There must be someone who could get good use out of it. Maybe turn it into a pair of curtains.
I said put it in the laundry bin, Bill.
Oh, right.
Not hearing the whole conversation? Book a free hearing check with one of our experts at Specsavers. Terms and conditions apply.
I've always loved courgettes.
RTE Radio 1.
The Dubliners Encore. Relive the songs, the stories, and the crack of Ireland's greatest folk band. The official stage show created by John Sheehan with musical director Phil Coulter. Live at the Gaiety Theatre Dublin from September 15th for 1 week only. Tickets available now from the Gaiety Theatre box office or Ticketmaster nationwide. See Dubliners Encore.com for more details.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
Okay, we've Bernie and Mary still on the line. And Bernie, I just wanted to get clarity here on this powerlifting, if you don't mind. What age is Billy? Do you mind me asking?
Billy, he's 81, I think, at the minute. This year he'll be 81, and he's younger than me, actually.
Right, okay.
2 years younger.
Not much. And and is he hoping to hold on to the title?
Oh, yes, he's hoping to go out with a bang. He's training hard for to hold his title. And he's gone to Slovakia for the title.
But that is just... Fair play to you. Fair play to you, Billy, if you can hear me, and I suspect you
there
can.
You go.
Right. I want to ask you, Mary, for everyone listening who might be told very quickly, who might be told or just sold by all these stories that they're hearing, these beautiful stories, what's your advice, women and men out there who might be looking for second love?
Go for it. Please go for it. And don't be put off by the bad dates. Look, buy my book, Third Time Lucky. It's on buythebook.ie.
Okay.
But if you get that, you'll read the bad stories. And yes, they're out there. The scammers are there.
Okay.
And
but it's
the
worth
bad
it.
Date. But no,
it's
go for it. It's worth it. They're full of positives and it adds excitement to your life.
Well, we can hear that from the two of you. Mary and Bernie, I got to fit another break in, so I got to go. But thank you so much.